all be involved around the Seder table, and we know that when we are experienced in the Seder, and we have the Haggadah in front of us, and the Seder plate in front of us, we're all poised to do what? We're all poised to express our gratitude to Hashem for delivering us from the nightmare that we experienced for 210 years in Egypt. I think one question that we need to ponder maybe is the question of how did we wind up in Egypt in the first place? How is it that we wound up, how is it that we wound up being slaves? We all know that Hashem runs this world. He micromanages everything. The things that are pleasant, that are uplifting, that are enjoyable are all micromanaged by Hashem. The things that are difficult and sometimes painful and, challenging, they're also micromanaged by Hashem. So it's obvious that not only did Hashem take us out from the slavery that we experienced in Egypt, but it's also obvious that we wound up becoming slaves in Egypt because Hashem placed us there to be slaves. So that's something to keep in mind, and that, I think, gives rise to a question. Supposing somebody is walking along on the street and he's carrying this, heavy metal bar. He walks over to some guy and he takes that metal bar and he smacks it across the guy's leg and he breaks his leg. So the guy's in agony. So the guy leans over and he says, don't worry. I'm an orthopedic surgeon and I'll take care of your leg. So he operates and he restores his leg and he can walk normally and he's in great shape. Now how will the fellow who was the patient, if you will, and recovered, how will he feel about what this guy did for him? And I think we all have a pretty good idea of how we'll feel. You did me a great favor, but I wish you wouldn't have done me any favor.
Stay away from
me. So, we're going to be expressing our gratitude to Hashem for taking us out of Mitzrayim. But we need to think about the fact that he put us there in the first place. So we need to have some understanding of what that was all about so that we won't think that our being delivered from Egypt is analogous to this little story I just told you. It's very different. So I'd like to discuss why we needed to be in Egypt. First of all, it's very obvious that Hashem, he put us in Egypt because we know that Hashem made a special covenant called the Bris Ben Habesarim with Avraham Avinu. And he told Avraham Avinu, he told him what was going to be happening in the future. And he told Avraham Avinu that he's going to exile, he's going to place his offspring in a situation of slavery. So this was planned. So even from the time of Avraham Avinu, Hashem told Avraham Avinu he's going to enslave the Jewish people, and we were enslaved. So, what's going on over here? So I think that it's important for us to understand, I hope to discuss tonight, what's the definition of Jewish nationhood? See, when did we become a nation? We know in America, when we won the revolution, against England, the Declaration of Independence, so that's when we became a nation. We know that when we came down into Egypt, we were not a Jewish nation. We were just a family of the Torah records that there were 70 people, there were 70 individuals, and the Torah even named them. That was it. And we came down to Egypt, and Hashem, see, usually if you take a look at how nations are formed, generally what occurs is that, you know, you have a group of people who are living in a certain territory, and, you know, before the time that they become a nation, you know, they develop a certain cohesiveness, if you will, and living in this area, they decide, you know, we're going to become a nation. Right? That's one possibility. Another possibility, of course, is that sometimes, if people will, through conquest, they'll take over somebody else's territory, and that's another way of becoming a nation. It's interesting to take note of the fact that what did we do to become a nation? We became a nation when we left Egypt. What did we do to become a nation? The answer is, we did absolutely nothing to become a nation. Everything happened, you know, just, you know, what wasn't something that we organized or implemented or tried to accomplish, whatever it was. We were slaves, and Hashem, he took us out, and when he took us out, that is the time that that was the beginning of our being Am Yisrael, the Jewish people. Now, we're trying to, first of all, we might understand, what was this business about? Why did we have to become slaves first? What was that all about? So, one thing we do know, as in Parshas Vayechi, the Torah tells us that the Jewish people, Vayishman, Yeshurun, Vayivat, the Jewish people that who were living, you know, we came down because of the famine, that it was a worldwide famine, we came down to Mitzrayim, and we were settled in Goshen. Goshen was the Beverly Hills of Egypt. We were living in a very affluent area. That particular area, and, you know, Yosef HaTzadik, he was running the show there. He was providing us with all kinds of comfort. We didn't have any problems with a famine. So the Torah tells us that the Jewish people, Vayishman Yeshurun, we waxed fat. It was like, got a little too comfortable. We started to assimilate. And, by the way, that's why Yosef, that was one of the reasons why Yosef was asked by his father Yaakov before he died that he should swear to him that he's going to bury him in the land of Canaan, the future Eretz Yisrael, in the cave of where his ancestors were buried, where Avram and Yitzhak were buried, because Yaakov Avinu saw that his family was starting to assimilate. And he felt that it was essential that they demonstrate that Egypt is not their homeland. And even though it was not easy for Yosef HaTzadik to arrange it, Yaakov Avinu understood he had to make him swear. But there was a spiritual shortcoming on the part of the Jewish people that made them liable for, you know, difficult therapy, if you will. But there's more to it than that, because Hashem wanted to create a special type of a nation. We're not a nation like any other nation. Hashem designed us to become the Am Hashem. We're not just a nation, but we are Hashem's nation. We're His people. Hashem calls us, we're the Am Segula, we're a chosen nation. Now, when we were in Egypt, if you wanted to take a survey of what people would maybe one day wind up as Hashem's chosen people, probably the last nation you would have picked was the Jewish people. We were the lowest of the low. We were slaves. We were dirt. And unfortunately, the environment that we lived in was an environment of immorality, of idolatry, And that, you know, we know that that brought us down spiritually to a very low level. Our sages tell us that there are 50 levels of spiritual decline. And we made it all the way down to level number 49. Understand? So we weren't doing so well. Mm-hmm. So if you were to take a survey and try to figure out whether who's going to become Hashem's chosen people, I don't think too many people would have picked the Jewish people. But Hashem had a plan. He wanted us to become His people. And Hashem, in order to make us His people, understood that we had to be in a situation where we were totally helpless. We had no control at all of our destiny, of the simplest things of daily living. We had no control whatsoever. And on the heels of that, what broke that, you know, cycle of enslavement, of having no control over anything? What broke that? A series of miracles. So you see what's going on over here. We went from one extreme to another. In order to become Hashem's people, we had to go from the bottom of the barrel way all the way up to the top. So what does it mean to be Hashem's people? It's not just, you know, like a banner. It's not just that we say we're Hashem's people. You know what it means to be Hashem's people? That what that means is to be the people who understand that their entire destiny is connected to Hashem. That's what it means to be Hashem's people. And so here's the idea. You see, supposing when we were in Egypt, we would have escaped. We really want to get out of there. Supposing we would have escaped. You know, there were some during the Holocaust. There were some people, relatively few, but there were some people who escaped. Supposing we would have escaped from being slaves in Egypt, or supposing we would have rebelled, we would have, you know, had a guerrilla warfare against the Egyptians, and we would have rebelled, and we would have fought them, and we would have been victorious and won. You see, if that would have been how we got out of Egyptian slavery, we would not be Hashem's people in this full sense that I just described, because there would be room for one to think that, whew, that was terrible slavery. It's a good thing we have a good army. Mm-hmm. Or it's a good thing that we have, you know, people who were able to figure out a good strategy for us to escape. It wouldn't have been clear, crystal clear, that this was all Hashem's doing. So Hashem, you see what Hashem did over here? He took us from one extreme, from the extreme of being totally helpless and broken, to the opposite extreme. How do we get out? The 10 plagues, Kriyas Yamsuf. We went from one extreme to the other. And going from one extreme to the other, as we did, that drove into our inner psyche the understanding that it's all about Hashem. It's all about Hashem. That's why, see, the formation of the Jewish people needed to entail first going through slavery, first being in the dungeon, and then being delivered by Hashem. There's no other explanation. There's no explanation at all, except for it was Hashem. And we know that, you know, if Hashem wanted to, if his entire objective was, you know, taking us out of Egypt, was to put an end to our slavery, Hashem didn't need 10 plagues. The author of Kelm says he could have done very well with just one good zest. Right over there, on that cup, one clop. Yeah, he could have gone straight to the smiting of the firstborn. That would have been it. What's the 10 plagues for? Took a while. The 10 plagues, the author of Kevin tells us, was not only to, you know, to punish the Egyptians, which of course it was. As a matter of fact, if you, there's a good thing to do before Pesach. If you analyze the plagues, and there's a lot written on this topic, you will notice that every one of the 10 plagues fit perfectly as a punishment for the Egyptians, because the specific ways in which they tortured their Jewish slaves, that was each one of the ways in which they tortured us, that's what caused them to have to experience a particular plague. So the author of Kelm says that it wasn't only a matter of punishing the Egyptians, but it was a matter of what was this all about? Creating the Am Hashem. We're the Am Hashem. And to create the Am Hashem, Hashem performed all of these plagues in order to impress upon us by every plague hit a different area of nature. Different area of nature to show how this was Hashem's not so subtle way of showing that he's running the show. Everything. He's running the show. And that's how we left. And it was at the moment that we left, that is how we became a nation. That's how we became Hashem's people. So it's very important for us to realize that as painful as the enslavement was, and we have to remind us that the Seder, or the bitter herb, whatever, to remind us of how bitter it was. But it's important for us to realize that there was a very constructive purpose in Hashem's putting us through this difficult situation, culminating in the miracles, going from one extreme to the other. And if you'll notice, in the Haggadah, the four questions. And how do we answer the kid when he asks his four questions? What do we say? We don't. What?
About them, yes.
In fact, what does that mean, Larry?
They were slaves.
Right. So why don't we just say, to answer the four questions, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. We don't just say that. Mm-hmm. We say we were slaves in Egypt. We mention that. We don't just talk about the fact that he took us out, because we are cognizant of the fact that our being slaves in Egypt and going from the extreme of that horrendous nightmare to total freedom through miracles, Hashem's miracles, that was the package deal that made us into the Am Hashem. So, see, when a person goes through a difficulty, this is an idea that our sages tell us, when a person goes through a difficulty, of course, we generally speaking don't have any insight into why we have to go through the difficulties that we go through in life. But if we go through a difficulty and Hashem pulls the strings and we come out of it okay, our sages recommend that when we say, Baruch Hashem, we're so grateful to Hashem, our gratitude should include the whole package deal, even though we have no idea why Hashem put us through the particular difficulty. But Hashem knows exactly why. And this is how, very important to understand that this is how we became a nation. Now, of course, when we talk about experiencing Pesach, we're talking about trying to not just express our gratitude to Hashem for what he did for us, but we're also talking about trying to enhance our level of emunah. Now, everybody in this room, I know you all well, so I know everybody in this room has emunah. But I will tell you this. In the 13 principles, basic principles of belief as a Jew, principle number one is Ani Mamin Be'emunah Shleima She'abori is Baruch Shemo. I believe with Emunah Shleima. Translation?
Complete belief.
That what? That Hashem, he created everything and he runs the world, and everything that happens because Hashem makes it happen. But if you'll notice, the wording over here is, and this is of course a lifetime project, to have a Emunah Shleima. You know, there's a lot that goes on in this world that tests our emuna. Sometimes we find ourselves in situations where we might wonder a little bit. And we see over here that the goal is to have emuna shleima. We want to have emuna shleima. So emuna shleima is something that we want to work on every day of our life. Of course, on Pesach, we have a special opportunity. We do have a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. How often? How often is the mitzvah of remembering the Exodus of Egypt?
Every day.
It applies every day, by morning and by night. When we end right, when we say the Shema, that's the right time to fulfill the mitzvah. And we're supposed to, you know, why do we have to? By the way, the mitzvah is to how we're supposed to remember the fact that we left Egypt, right? The Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's six things that a Jew is supposed to remember every day, and the very first one is the fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. There's a very strong connection here, because even though we can all put together a very sophisticated list of proofs of how we know that Hashem exists, but the number one proof is the proof that Hashem himself chose when he commanded us to believe in him in the Aseret HaDibros of the Ten Commandments, when he identified himself. He could have identified himself as Am Hashem created the world. That would be pretty impressive. But the Ramban says that he identified himself as the one who took us out of the tribe. Why?
Witnesses.
Correct. Witnesses. Exactly. It's logical that the creation came about through Hashem. I'll tell you the truth. This morning, I parked my car in my space behind Jeff's office. So I get out of his car. I get out of my car. So everything's basher. So a few days ago, I had left my black bag with my talisman tefillin and a sefer on the hood of my car.
Oh.
Not good. So, what? Yeah, after I parked the car. So, I went inside. Yep. So I didn't even realize I had left it. So later that day, a guy came over to me. And he says, you know, that I found your black bag. And he put it in the store next to Jeff's office. So I went in and picked it up. Very good. I thanked the guy for his honesty. Fine. So this morning, when I got out of my car, I saw the guy, the same guy was there. So we had a relationship already. No more accidents in this world. Yeah. So we had a relationship. So we started, you know, we started smoothing. So the first thing the guy said to me was, gee, I hope you don't mind my asking you, but why do you wear that black hat? So we had a little talk about that, and we didn't get into that so much. He said he grew up in the Midwest. So I said, oh, you grew up in the Midwest? I said, I used to go to a camp in Aurora, Indiana. Mm-hmm. That's where my wife and I met. Mm-hmm. We were both counselors. And what can I tell you? A few counselors would be off. You know, they had a day off. So in those days, you could go hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. I can't try that today, right? But in those days, you could go hitchhiking. So there was one time there was somebody, one of the counselors from the camp. He was out with a group of people, and somebody from the town of Aurora, Indiana, walks over to this guy, and I told this to this fellow. I said, this guy, he picks up the guy's hat. I said, it wasn't like my hat. It was like a baseball hat. Mm-hmm. He picks up this guy's hat, and he looks underneath the hat, and he said, what? No horns! Mm-hmm. Yeah. You understand? No horns. So we smooth a little bit. So this guy tells me, he says, I want you to know I'm an atheist. Mm-hmm. I'm an atheist. So we didn't get into any big discussions, you know, he had to go. So I said, I'm just going to mention one thought for you to think about. I said, you know, so if you have a couple of dice, and you take one of the dice, and, you know, and you throw it onto the table, and it comes out, you get a six, what would you say? Nothing. I mean, chance of 1/6 of the chance again. So I came with a stick. I said, what if you would see a guy do that? And then he did the same thing again, and he got 2/6. Hmm. All right, you know, it's not a big deal. I said, what if he got 3/6? What if the guy did that 10 times in a row, and he got 10/6 in a row? What would you say to him? I say, the dice were loaded. I said, what if you understand? I said, so I said, you know, like, because it's after a certain point, if you do that 100 times, you know what I'm saying? I said, the likelihood of getting a blade of grass by accident is far, far more unlikely than rolling a dice 100 times and getting 100 sixes. So he thought about that. He said, we got to talk. So I gave him my phone number. I don't know where this is going, but all right. That was just a, you know, that was just a, that's, you know, you park in Jeff, you never know what happens.
Okay.
So, see, we live in a world that looks at things that happen the way the Egyptians looked at things. See, the Egyptians had the understanding that everything happens naturally. When the 10 plagues were devastating every aspect of Egyptian life, and it was quite obvious, really, very obvious, that somebody upstairs was operating over here, you know, because Moshe Rabbeinu, he predicted when every one of the plagues would start, precisely, and when every one of the plagues would end. And that's how it happened. So you didn't have to be a, you know, you didn't have to be a genius to realize that this was the Hashem. But the Egyptians, you see, the people, they have a perspective. People, when people look at things and they think that things are happening just through nature. You know, they just happen, you know, nothing to talk about. So they get into a certain mode of interpreting things, no matter what's going on. It could be a remarkable event. It could be something that doesn't have any reasonable scientific explanation, any logical explanation, but it's nature. That's it. And that's why, I'll tell you something interesting. When the Egyptians, at the, you know, during the, it was game time, in terms of their leaving the world, when they were in the Yam came crashing down upon them. And you know what the Egyptians said? The Egyptians said, Vayoma Mitzrayim. The whole Egyptian army that was in the sea, they said, Anuso Mipnei Yisrael. I'm going to flee before the Jewish people. Mipnei Yisrael. Why? Ki nilcham, ki Hashem nilcham lohem b'Mitzrayim. Because Hashem is fighting for them in Egypt. So, wait a second, there's a little problem over here. Because at the time that the Egyptians said, we've got to get out of here. We've got to get out of here. Hashem is fighting for them. They weren't in Egypt. This was outside of Egypt. They had left Egypt. This was in the sea. So what should the Pasuk have said? Let's get out of here. Hashem is, he's fighting for them here in the sea, in the ocean, in the sea. But they said in Egypt. Why did they say in Egypt? I saw a very interesting explanation to the effect that when the plagues were happening in Egypt, the Egyptians didn't get it. They said, everything is nature. This is nature. We'll get over this. They didn't realize. They didn't understand. They didn't put two and two together and figure out, this is Hashem! But finally, during the last moments of their life, they finally got it. Mm-hmm. And why did they say, as Hashem is fighting for them in Egypt, they were in the sea? Mm-hmm. Because they finally came to realize that everything that happened in Egypt, that all the plagues that they wrote off as just being nature, that was Hashem. They finally got it. And it was a little late in the game for them to get it. Mm-hmm. But I guess we say that was a teaching moment to them. They were about to drown. And, you know, they were about to drown. And during their last moments of life, they finally had some kind of emuna. They finally realized, you know, oh, Hashem, did that have any value for them? I think it did. Even though it was at the end of the line. Of course, it's good if a person has, you know, develops real emuna when they're younger and they can do something about it and they can build a life. But they got it, you know. I guess in a certain way, Hashem did him a favor. At the last moment, they finally got it. But very important to understand that we live in a world that increasingly sees everything that's happening around us the way the Egyptians saw things. Today, I had to take a pill, an antibiotic. You know, we have a Hebrew word, you know, for things that happen naturally. What is that called? Teva. Right? Teva. Mm-hmm. So, I saw on my antibiotic pill, there was only one word on the pill. Teva. Teva. You know, when we take medicine, by the way, and this is true for any kind of medical procedure, anything we go to a doctor, take medication, very important to understand that I want to have a, you know, we want to have a refuah shleima. It's important to understand that the refuah shleima is completely in Hashem's hands. So, what am I bothering taking the pill for? I just pray to Hashem and say, please Hashem, I need a refuah shleima. Why do you have to go to a doctor? Torah even says you have to go to a doctor. Torah says that, you know, you're not allowed to be like the Seventh-day Adventists. They don't go to doctors. You know, can you say? You're supposed to go to the doctor. Not only do we have to go to a doctor, but the Torah says, v'rapo yirape, which means when you want to go to a doctor, you can't look at, you can't go to the Yellow Pages and find a doctor. You have to really go out of your way to find a really good doctor. Really good, okay? So we're always supposed to be cognizant of the fact that whatever we're doing in life, the results are always in the hands of Hashem, including, in this case, taking medication. But the medication is called Teva. So I want you to know there's a book that I happened to notice. This goes back a couple of years, that caught my eye while I was just browsing around. And the name of this book, I bought the book in fact, is We Are Not Alone. We Are Not Alone. Now, this book, written by an individual whose name was Adi Cohen, who was an Israeli, he wrote it in Hebrew, was translated into English, an excellent translation, by the way. What he does is he goes through different, you know, areas of evidence, including history, including science, including philosophy, including theology, you name it, a whole gamut of areas. And one by one, at the end of every chapter, he says, if you analyze, you know, what I'm talking about in this chapter, it becomes clear that we are not alone. Now, he doesn't tell you who else is here. Very simple. He just says, we are not, so it's obvious, we are not alone. And at the very end of the book, he lets the cat out of the bag. But it's a very well-written book. So, what have we got here? So, yesterday, I had to go to an endodontist, out in Suffolk County, for a planned root canal, which he wound up not doing, so you can all breathe a sigh. So I came in, I sat down in the waiting room after I signed in. And there was a coffee table right in front of me, and the entire top of the coffee table was covered with magazines. And I was sitting there, and directly in front of me, the magazine that was closest to me, like under my nose, was a March edition, last month's edition of National Geographic. And I saw that the cover story of the National Geographic was, we are not alone. So the first thought that went through my mind was, maybe they finally got it. But I discounted that idea very quickly, because I know who I'm dealing with. So I opened it up, and this was an article that was written by an astrobiologist. What's an astrobiologist? You might be able to figure it out. An astrobiologist is someone who studies life in outer space. So this article said that, you know, we used to wonder if there's life in other parts of the universe, and now we know for sure that there's life in other parts of the universe, but now we have to find them. But it's clear that we are not alone. And the article, you know, this astrophysicist spoke about the fact that there's tremendous interest in this area, and billions of dollars are going to be, you know, invested by government and by private corporations to find out who else is out there. We are not alone. So you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of what Rashi says, you know, when it came to the plague the slaying of the firstborn. So Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem that the plague would be precisely at midnight, right on the nose. And when Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, he predicted every plague, he came to Paro, and he didn't tell Paro that Hashem said it's going to happen precisely at midnight. Rather, he said Hashem said it's going to be around midnight. Rashi says that means a little bit early, a little late. It wasn't precise. So why wasn't it precise? If it would have been more precise, it would have been a bigger Kiddush Hashem, a greater sanctification of Hashem's name. If he got it right on the note, he said it'll be around midnight. Why did he say around midnight? So Rashi says, because Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned that maybe if the Egyptians were a little bit off on their calculation of time, and if they looked at their watches, and precisely at midnight, when the firstborn were dying, their watch would have said 5 to 12. Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned that the Egyptian astrologers, who were the great intellectuals of Egypt, what were they going to say? They're going to say, Moshe, that guy Moses, he's a faker. He's an imposter. Yeah? He could have worked in the White House. You know? They're going to say, you can't believe this guy. You can't believe this guy. That's what Rashi says. So one of my rebbeim in Jerusalem, Rav Moshe Cheik, who was the head of the Jerusalem branch of Chabad, he said the following. He says, wait a second. What was Moshe Rabbeinu worried about? What was he worried about? The Egyptians, the astrologers, they were brilliant people. If they saw the evidence that pointed to Moshe Rabbeinu being on target, that there's really a God, if they saw, as the Torah records, in every single Egyptian home there was a dead corpse. Everyone. So look at all the evidence that shows that Moshe Rabbeinu was right, that it's Hashem. Look at how much evidence. And look how much evidence there is that indicates that he was an imposter. The watches were 5 minutes off. Maybe there was something wrong with their watches. That didn't occur to them. Mm-hmm. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that people see what they want to see. People interpret things as they wish to. There's a tremendous amount of evidence that indicates we are not alone. But you see what you want to see. If you want to see the Yad Hashem, the hand of Hashem, then you get a hold of this book. Then you study Torah, and you see that there's a propriety. Obvious, you know, we're constantly trying to reinforce our movement. And if a person, if somebody doesn't want to see it, then they'll, you know, they just won't get it. People see what they want to see. And Moshe Rabbeinu understood human psychology. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, he decided, I'm not taking any chances with these guys. It'll be around midnight. So that if they might were a little bit off on the phone, it would make a difference. So I would like to say, as we approach Pesach, very important to realize we have an opportunity. We have a real opportunity to try to enhance and strengthen our Emuna, which is, as I mentioned earlier, is a lifetime project. That's what we're trying to do over here. When we go through, in addition to the fact that we want to express our gratitude to Hashem, We also want to consciously and deliberately be mechazik to strengthen our own emunah. And for that reason, it's very, very important that, you know, you have to, to do the haggadah, to do a seder properly, is very important, not just to, you know, kind of smear through the haggadah until somebody yells out, when do we eat? You know what I'm saying? That doesn't do it. That doesn't work to show gratitude, and it certainly doesn't work to strengthen our emunah. So, in my humble opinion, what we need to realize is that to have a meaningful seder, see, the seder is the time when we really can, you know, we can do something really important to strengthen our emunah, because, you know, this is it. Hashem is, you know, every day we can see the fingerprints of Hashem, but there's nothing more powerful, there's nothing more potent than going through the nace of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, there was a couple hundred years ago during the time of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Unfortunately, there were many Jews who, even though they grew up in religious homes, some of them went to Cheder, a lot of them were, you know, dropping out of Yiddishkeit. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was staying over in an inn, and the innkeeper, he was berating observance of the Torah. It's all superstition. You know, he was very embittered, and he was a tough case. He was a tougher case than the guy I met in the parking lot today. You understand? So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he didn't say anything to him. So later on in the evening, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter noticed that in the lobby of the hotel, there was newspaper articles about the innkeeper's daughter. Apparently, she was an accomplished concert performer. She was a very distinguished, well-known pianist, and she was written up as a top star, very famous. So Rabbi Yisrael walks over to the innkeeper's daughter and says, "I see what it says over here in the newspaper articles, but I'll tell you the truth, I don't believe what it says there. I think it's probably all made up. I'd like you to perform for me. I'd like to hear you play. If you're so good, let me hear." So she got a little insulted, and she went over to her father, and she said, "This guy, his rabbi, he's telling me he wants me to play for him. And, should I play for him? You know, he says he doesn't trust what he says." "No," he says, "why? You don't have to play for him. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry that walks in and says they want you to play, you have to play. You see what it says over here. You see the articles. It's clear. You see the pictures. Forget about this guy." So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said to the innkeeper, "Hashem gave his concert by Yetzias Mitzrayim. That was the concert. That was the grand performance. That was where Hashem showed he's running the world. And that's why, you know, we have so many mitzvot during the whole year that are Zechu Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have to constantly remember, we go through the whole nine yards of the Seder, but every day there's a mitzvah of Zechira. We have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, because if that gets a little hazy, then we're in trouble. Then our moon is in a very weak position. So it's very important to realize, and by the way, the Ramban says this. The Ramban says that Yetzias Mitzrayim is the most important way, the single most important way for us to strengthen our emunah. So when we have our Seder, we have to try to realize this is an opportunity to strengthen our emunah. And of course, that opportunity includes what? See, you understand, we're talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim happened over 3,300 years ago. So we say this is the basis of our emunah. So what if a person doesn't know the story? What if a person doesn't know about Yetzias Mitzrayim? What about if our kids don't know about Yetzias Mitzrayim? Then what happens? What's going to be? That's why there's a mitzvah. There's only one mitzvah in the entire Torah where the Torah says, you've got to tell the story. You have to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim to your kid. It's not enough if you read about it in a book. It's not even enough if you learn about it in yeshiva. He has to hear from his parents the details, the beautiful episode of Yetzias Mitzrayim with as much detail as possible. So you understand, you know, if somebody would like to tell the story to their kid about Goldilocks and the three bears, first you have to know the story. Mm-hmm. You can't convey the story of Goldilocks and the three bears unless you know the story about Goldilocks and the three bears. Then you can give it over. You can't tell the story to your kids and inspire them and leave a lasting imprint on them unless you know the story. You have to know the story. You have to really know the story. Then you realize, I got something I'm going to tell my kids, my grandchildren. This is what we have to do. And this is how our Muna, we're able to pass it on from generation to generation. So I just would like to conclude with, you know, stressing that we all have this opportunity. You know how we got out of Egypt? In what schus? I told you what got us into Egypt. But you know what the merit was? You know which mitzvah got us out of Egypt? It was the fact that during the enslavement that we were experiencing, we were strong in our emunah. That's how we got out. And the Eitz Yosef says that was a precedent that teaches us how we're going to get out of the present goals. We're looking forward to getting out of the present goals. I saw something today I never saw before. Rav Shmir Cutler, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Lakewood Yeshiva, which had its origin at Westchester, by the way. That's where the Lakewood Yeshiva originally existed. Rav Shmir Cutler said that Moshe Rabbeinu was originally commissioned by Hashem to bring about the redemption, the final redemption of the Jewish people, not only to take us out of Egypt, but that would be it. We wouldn't be sitting around waiting for the Mashiach to come, because Moshe Rabbeinu would have been the man. That's it. No, we wouldn't have any exile, no goers. What happened? What happened was that we blew it because we were not on a sufficient spiritual level to merit the final redemption. But Hashem saw that he had to get us out of there right away. You know why he had to get us out of there right away? He couldn't delay the redemption from Egypt, because I told you before, we hit level 49. We hit level 49. And Hashem knew if we're going to be there a little bit longer, we're going to come to 50. And when you hit 50, that's it. You're toasted. You're at the point of no return. So he decided he had to take us out. But now, well, we got to push ahead now. We're trying to get to the final redemption. And the Eitz Yosef says that the way to do it is to strengthen ourselves in our personal emunah and to strengthen our kids in their emunah. If we have the proper chemistry for our emunah, a close relationship with Hashem in the crazy world that we live, that's going to do it. So hopefully we'll get there and we'll all have remember one thing, with this I'll conclude. We know that there's a pasuk in Mach that says that as great as the miracles of the Exodus were, and they really were home diggers of a miracle, the miracles that will occur during the final redemption of our people will dwarf the incredible miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So fasten your seatbelts, strengthen your emunah, and with Hashem's help, we'll get there real soon. If anybody has any questions, comments, suggestions, jokes, whatever it is, we're happy to hear from you. Yeah. All right. I would like to, Harvey, I want to give you a big yeshikah for your hospitality. Mm. And Harvey would like to invite everybody to partake in the wonderful refreshments that are available. And I want to have to make two announcements.